Hello, and welcome to another episode of Film Favorites. My name is Bryce Vales, and with me as always is my good friend, Aaron Chase.
Hey, Bryce.
Hello, Aaron. Ah. Well, we had a nice streak going there for a while, some movies you were really enjoying, and then we hit a bit of a bump.
Yeah.
In the road there with You've Got Mail.
Was not a fan. Was that... I keep thinking of Sleepless in Seattle. Yes, that was You've Got Mail.
It's not Sleepless in Seattle. You'll be happy to hear we will not be watching Sleepless in Seattle during this podcast. Not a huge fan of that movie.
Good. If it's anything like You've Got Mail, good.
It is. I mean, it's like it, only a bit creepier. Let's just hop into it. This new episode of Film Favorites, where we're... Film Favorites, where we're counting down my top 500 favorite films of all time. Favorite films, favorite. Not best films.
Right. Favorite.
I think with this next film, that's an important distinction to make.
I'm excited.
Because I'm sure you're going to have thoughts on this one.
Okay.
Next up, we're starting this episode at number 457.
Hey!
The first David Fincher film. His 1999 quote-unquote masterpiece, Fight Club.
Okay.
Okay.
Why quote-unquote? Why so low? Why so low?
Honestly, if I were to redo this list in a few years, it probably wouldn't be on the list.
Okay.
Definitely not my David Fincher film. Not by a long shot. I love him as a filmmaker a lot. I love David Fincher. I love so many of his movies. This is not one of his films that I love.
Why?
I find it to be aggressively nihilistic, and I know it's satirical, but it's so nihilistic for like 90% of its runtime. Then like, you know what? No, that was all wrong. And that would be fine, but the culture that's like surrounded the film...
Oh, outside of what the film is.
Right. Is admittedly like coloring my opinion of the film, because it seems like loads of the fans of Fight Club are just like, yeah, Tyler Durden,
they
pretty
don't
cool.
He's kind of a villain.
Kind of. No, yeah, you know, he's just kind of.
He's
a villain.
All right, I'll tell you why I like it. And we're going to talk about nihilism.
Yeah.
I don't view it as nihilistic until I think the midway point. So I love the first half of Fight Club. And the second half, it loses me a bit. First half doesn't feel nihilistic as much as it feels liberating. It feels like the beginning of Tyler's message of like, get rid of all your shit. You don't need all this stuff.
A lot of good anti-consumerism.
Yeah, sure. You're just a human. Be a person and experience life in the moment. I like that.
That was the film, I don't think I'd mind it nearly as much.
But then it becomes what it becomes. I think it's a snowball effect.
Mm-hmm.
It starts off with good. I don't think Tyler had good intentions, but the film, the vibe of it feels like, yeah, we need this. We need to liberate ourselves and be men and whatever. And then it becomes, to me, it's a fable in when a good idea can become twisted, if that makes sense.
I get what you're getting at.
Yeah.
I like what you're saying about snowball.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is very much a snowball effect. It's this little thing, and it just grows and grows and grows and grows into this terrible thing.
Yeah.
But having seen it, like I know what the snowball is turning into. It just upon every rewatch, it like that nihilism. I feel it from the very beginning because I know where that snowball's gone. I know like the honest intent behind this, like, let go of your material possessions and screw society, let's just... And that's another thing, like, anarchy as a concept is... Let's not get too political here.
Right.
But it just...
An anarchist is stupid.
Okay, cool. We can just outright say that. Good.
Can I explain why that's stupid?
Please.
Most people I've met that are like, I'm an anarchist... Which I've met, and it's always dudes.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I've never met a woman that's like, yeah, society needs to crumble.
They're out there.
There are they?
Well, there has to be.
Do they know how to fight? Because that's the only way I could see them surviving an anarchy world. But An anarchist, they're usually like, I see them as like fat man beard dudes who, if anarchy really did happen, they wouldn't survive. Like, they don't understand what anarchy really means.
Mm-hmm. Social outcast looking for some kind of
think something reason. To rail against.
Yeah.
But for me, I relate up until that halfway point, up until it becomes culty and crazy. I've always related to that. Why do I need all this shit? I'm super stripped down as a person, as mm-hmm. you're well aware.
I'm looking around your place right now.
Can we call this a place?
This is by definition a place.
This is a place. But I like the idea, like all of his philosophies, everything he's talking about, I just really related to. And I think that's the difference. I don't think you relate to the beginning of it.
Not as much. To a point, I do. I mean, I really enjoy the idea of a minimalistic lifestyle. I think what it boils down to, as far as my enjoyment of the film, is that. I just don't enjoy it.
If we took out the politics, mm-hmm. and you just looked at it from the acting and the writing and the cinematography...
It's a very well-made film.
Okay.
That's why it's on the list. Mm-hmm. It's a well-made... David Fincher makes good movies. Even my least favorite of his films, and this isn't my least favorite, but... Even my least favorite of his films, there are many admirable qualities to the filmmaking at the very least. And he's a very thoughtful filmmaker. This one rubs me the wrong way from the word go until the end. A lot of his films are aggressive. This one seems... It just crosses that line into...
Silly?
It is not absurd, not silly. It just goes just to that point where I am now not engaged. It is just, yep.
You're just done.
I'm done with how right. this film gets. And that its idea of masculinity. And again, I get Tyler Durden's whole manifesto is not to be taken...
Literally.
Literally or as... a good thing. Mm-hmm. He is the antagonist.
Right.
But again, so many people that love this film, not everybody, obviously,
misinterpret.
A lot of people misinterpret it, and they just, like, they see the first half of the film, and like, yeah, Tyler Durden's my man.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's everything, like, so meta, from a meta kind of perspective, looking not just at the film, but as the culture surrounding the film, it does color my opinion of it a bit.
I think after you've explained it, now it makes sense. Yeah. This is your top five. We have to keep reiterating favorite. Is a personal preference. Though.
Best films. It would probably be a little higher. I don't think of it as like I don't think of it as a masterpiece. I did say quote unquote masterpiece because I think a lot of people view it that way. But it certainly is a very good film.
Mm-hmm. So it's a personal thing.
It's a personal thing.
100%. Well, we won't be able to watch it anyway.
No, we will not, because you've seen it. You showed it to me, actually. First time I saw it, you showed it to me.
Really? Yeah. I showed you a thing?
You showed me a thing.
That never happens.
That had been on my to-watch list for so long.
Did you... You knew the twist?
I did, sadly.
Do you think you would have noticed it?
I don't know. It's hard when you know going in for the first time. If I don't know going into a film, I can re-watch a film with a twist, mm-hmm. and it not really affect my enjoyment. Because I can remember my first time watching it and being enjoying it from that perspective.
We should talk about this at the end of the podcast, but have you heard of Unspoil Me?
No.
I'll show you later.
We're going to talk about Unspoil Me after the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay.
I could tell you now if you want. I don't know if you
I mean, would it be...
Basically, it's a YouTube thing. It's a hypnosis thing, kind of, where you watch it and it helps you forget. Like, if you... Fuck you. It helps you forget the movie a little bit. Fuck you. Fuck you. Open your third eye, Bryce. Is that what your third eye sounds like?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, well, I'm glad that works for you. Moving on.
Yeah.
To number 456. Okay. Another film from 1999... That's not nearly as good, but I like just a little bit more.
Okay.
Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow.
That's Johnny Depp, obviously. I actually asked that genuinely for a second.
He's not in everything that Tim Burton has done, but yeah, he's in this.
Right. I don't think I've ever seen it.
No.
I want to say Christopher Walken is in it.
Christopher Walken, Johnny Depp, Christopher Walken, Christina Ricci. It has a great, actually, supporting cast. A lot of great British character actors. Michael Gough, Michael Gambon, Ian McDermott. A lot of great character actors in it, but Tim Burton does that a lot. Christopher Lee, I think, is in it.
I think the only thing I've seen from it is like a Nostalgia Critic discussion about it. Mm-hmm. I know you just look disgusted with me.
No.
But that's all I know about it. And that's the only reason I remember Christopher Walken is he's being especially hammy in it or something like that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess even for him it's a little hammier.
Why is it on the list? I don't know anything about it, really. Because I love the sleeve, the cartoon. I love the cartoon.
Ichabod Crane.
It's really good.
It's not the last Tim Burton film of his that I like, but it's one of the last of his later films. And this was 1999, so I'm like, it's been a while. I'm not a huge fan of his later work. But it is visually just so wonderful to look at. I mean, I think it had 3 Oscar noms, costume design, cinematography, and it won for best art direction. And yeah, you can see why when you see the film. It is just visually very impressive, stylistically. Tim Burton's just...
Peak Tim Burton?
Peak macabre Tim Burton, which a lot of his stuff is macabre, but this is like in that sort of Sweeney Todd kind of just really dark and twisted kind of a aesthetic. And a big part of why I like the film is the aesthetic. I think it is just, it's dripping with mood. And like, I like the supporting cast. It's a film, 100%, it's the visuals.
Okay.
I like the way it looks, and I like the way it makes me feel if I'm in that mood for like something kind of, not creepy, but dark fairy tale. Yeah, Tim Burton.
Tim Burton.
If I'm in that kind of Tim Burton mood, this is a good one for that.
Visuals do not connect to me in the same way as philosophy or editing or acting or writing.
Mm-hmm.
As of recent, I've been able to enjoy visuals more, but I think right now I'm not afraid to watch it, at least.
Yeah, I wouldn't be.
Yeah,
I think you'd be at least fine with it.
Right now I'm thinking if I had the option of Fight Club, I would pick Fight Club.
Well, yeah,
because I really love Fight Club, but I'm not upset right now. And I'm not concerned because I know, like, at least I have...
At the very least, you can fall back on this, even if you hate the next film.
Mm-hmm, which I'm very curious about.
I'm curious about your thoughts on this one, too, actually. Would you just move on? Because it's Sleepy Hollow.
Sleepy Hollow.
You know what you're getting into. Tim Burton, Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
Ichabod Crane, Headless Horseman.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. My number 455, that feels like a good number.
We're getting there.
We're really getting there, Aaron.
Yeah.
Is director Walter Hill's 1984 rock and roll fable, Streets of Fire.
Okay. I don't know what that is.
Streets of Fire is like the tagline. It's like that what they used to advertise it was a rock and roll fable. It's... They labeled it as a musical.
Jukebox musical?
Not even. The musical is all diegetic. So it's these bands playing music. So it's not like people randomly breaking out into song. So it's diegetic. It's in the world. The music is being performed. And it's this neat kind of mix of like retro 50s and then modern 80s aesthetic. So it's like this sort of... They're going for this timeless kind of vibe of like, yeah, it's a little 50s. It's a little 80s. It's a place... And time that we can't put our finger on, which ties into the fable thing. So it goes for this kind of classic, some might say cheesy, kind of vibe that I just kind of dig.
Okay.
And Jim Steinman wrote a couple of the songs, and I love Jim Steinman.
What else has Jim Steinman done?
He's a singer-songwriter, mostly known for his songwriting, not so much his singing career, but he's probably best known for writing a lot of Meatloaf's songs. The first two Ballad of Hell albums, the obviously the two best Meatloaf albums, all written by Jim Steinman. He's got a great sound. Actually, when I first saw this, I think it's the first song in the movie. It's opening up with that. I'm like, this sounds a lot like a Jim Steinman song.
Yeah.
And of course, I looked it up afterwards. Like, yeah, it's a Jim Steinman song. You can just tell.
That's definitely, for me, between Sleepy Hollow and, what is this called again?
Streets of Fire. Great cast. Mm-hmm. Michael Pere, who's whatever, but Diane Lane, Rick Moranis.
Hey!
Willem Dafoe.
What?
Yeah, no, it's like, and all young, you like ooh, young Willem Dafoe, really young Diane Lane. I think she was like 18 when they filmed this.
Right now, the only thing making me lean to it is that you said Rick Moranis. And I'm very curious. Rick Moranis is Rick Moranis.
He plays kind of like this sleazy manager of her boyfriend manager, who's just kind of like, hey, you might be the big tough shot, but I'm the smart guy with the money kind of character.
That is what's making me torn. The safe choice to me is Sleepy Hollow, because kind of know the story, and it's Tim Burton.
It's Tim Burton. Admittedly, in Sleepy Hollow, they take the story in weird places because it's Tim Burton. It's not a straight up, like, it's much, kind of to its detriment, much more complicated than the tale probably should be. But you still know what you're getting into.
Yes. With this, I have no idea. Like, what you're describing, I can picture, but you know, I don't know. I don't know what the movie's about at all, really. So, or I don't know. I've never watched it, so I don't know what.
Guy tries to get girl back from bad guys who took girl.
Very simple.
Like, it's a fable. Like, they're going for this rock and roll fairy tale kind of thing.
I think I'm leaning to Street Fire, man.
Streets of Fire. Oh boy,
you look concerned.
It's definitely the riskier option.
Yeah,
I think you know that.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing it.
Sure.
I know that I know I picked not Sleepless in Seattle
because You've Got Mail.
Yeah, I picked You've Got Mail because it was less risky
than Dracula and Journey to the West.
Right.
That weird martial arts.
Yeah, I picked that because it was less risky. My logic with it was like, it was strange that you put it in there in the first place. That's why I wanted to see it.
Mm-hmm.
With this one, I think I just might roll the dice for fun. Just to see what happens.
All right. I'm interested in seeing what you think of it. You definitely have to be in the right mindset. It is, like I said, it is cheesy and intentionally so.
Okay.
But it's going for a very particular vibe. And if you don't vibe with it, it's going to be pretty dull.
Oh. Okay.
You got to be like in that sort of... It's hard to explain. I think...
Suspend your disbelief?
I mean, yeah, it's a bunch of rock and roll musicians doing action stuff.
Okay. I think we'll see. Can we do it? Let's do it.
We can do it. Okay. I'm excited, Aaron, for you to see Walter Hill's quote-unquote masterpiece.
This is his masterpiece?
No.
Oh, okay.
Probably 48 Hours is his masterpiece. But 1984's Streets of Fire.
Streets of Fire.
So, Aaron.
Yes, Chris.
Tell me about Streets of Fire.
Streets of Fire is... it is about a... And it's in another time, in another place. And it is about a singer who gets kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And a drifter, I guess you could call him.
Sure.
Comes into town.
Just out of the army?
Yeah, sure. Out of the army. Comes into town or the city or whatever, and is hired to do a job to save this singer who has been kidnapped, and just so happens to have a past intimate relationship with her.
Not just so happens. He's also explicitly contacted by his sister to come back and save the singer.
Right. Well, he's paid to do it.
Yes.
And that is the plot.
Yep. Goes and gets ex fling/famous singer.
Yes.
From bad guy gang.
Mm-hmm.
accompanied by ragtag group of
misfits.
Sure, ne'er-do-wells.
Yes.
And, yeah.
It's very simple.
Very simple.
I will start with the negatives and then end on the positives.
Seems like there's going to be more positives than negatives.
There are going to be more positives.
Glad to hear.
The negatives, I would say, are that it's one note, and that's also a positive. It's part of it.
Yeah.
It's part of it. It's a take it or leave it thing. But the negative side of it, it is very one note and obvious and by the books.
Very much so.
Yeah. As soon as it started, as soon as I understood what the plot was, as soon as I was like, oh, find the girl, it was a game of Mario, find the princess, all it is. And
get her back.
And get her back.
And get her back.
And, or yeah. And as soon as I figured that out, I was like, oh, okay, then I know how this story is going to go beat for beat.
Yeah.
The moment it got to the rising action and then the protagonist at his lowest point and the bat, it was just very formulaic.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that some of the side characters and the quest, I think, were underutilized. Specifically, the Spade Band, I guess, is what you call them.
That's what the police called them.
The police called them. I was really shocked that they did that. Actually, that would be a negative for me. That, like, this is one of the jokes we were making through the whole movie is another time in another place.
They explicitly state that at the beginning of the film. Behind the card and everything. It's another time, it's another place.
Yes, because it's weird. It's super, it's like, it's very clearly, it's like realism and fantastical kind of mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when weird things would happen, when goofy shit would happen, we would make this joke like, well, it's another time, another place. It is what it is. And there's a scene where they hijack this tour bus. If you can even call it that.
Yeah.
It's like a makeshift tour bus where there's these singers of basically the Temptations.
Sure.
That's what they are. And so they hijack it and the Temptations are coming along with them on the journey. And then they get stopped by a blockade of police who come into the bus. And Rick Moranis' character is being really aggressive.
Like, as always.
As always. The whole movie.
One note. Everyone is... They have their character and they stick to it.
All they are. But he's being super aggressive. He's like, get out of here. You speak this language. Here's some money, coppers. Get the fuck out of here.
You're wasting our time.
And so Rick Moranis is going off on the cops. And for some reason, why did they bring this up?
Well, because Rick Moranis is flaunting cash. Like, here, you know, I'll pay you off. Just let us through. And they're like, oh, yeah, sure. A rich black band?
Yeah, that's what it was. And the band is quiet. They're being very respectful. Like, they're sitting there in the corner waiting for this to be done. They just got their bus hijacked. And the cop is like, a Spade Band. And I'm like, Jesus. Like...
Racism still exists in another time and another place.
Yeah, in this universe... is weird, and yet that kind of got on my nerve. That was unnecessary to me.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever.
You take that one line out, and that's
the only
instance of that popping up.
But you know, it is what it is.
It was an unnecessary choice.
Yeah, and it was made in the 80s.
Yeah.
So that makes it weirder too. It's like if it stuck to the 50s, there'd be a piece of me that was like, all right.
That's the thing. It is kind of going for this like retro 50s aesthetic through a good chunk of it.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
So that was the negatives, I would say, are just that some of the characters are underutilized. It's very, very one note and it's obvious.
Not Ellen Aim getting punched in the face? You're going to put that under the positive section?
That's okay. So apparently there's this trope that I was unaware of in film. So okay, so our main character, Tom Cody.
Tom Cody.
Tom Cody is talking, it's near the climax. He has to go out and do stuff.
He's got to go on one last mission. It's dangerous.
Yeah, he's got to do one last mission. And the love interest?
Yeah.
The love interest.
X-Fling, famous singer.
Princess Peach of the movie. He's like, I need to go with you, basically. Right? Something like that?
Yeah, she wants to stick with him.
She wants to help. Or something. She hasn't really been helping, has she?
No, well, no, she doesn't want to help. They want to. She wants to run off with him.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, "Nah, I can't do that. I got this thing.
Yeah,
I got to beat up this guy.
Yeah." So he's basically like, "You can't come with me." If I understand it correctly, she's implying like, "I want to come with you regardless." So he punches her in the face and knocks her out.
Yep.
And it's treated as like a sweet, intimate moment?
No, it's not treated like a sweet, intimate
moment. Well, not, it's treated like a, like he did the right thing.
Sure, like I have to be rough with you to save you. Yeah, no, it's an unfortunate trope. That is, I've seen it quite a few times, actually.
That's crazy to me. Yeah. That's like, and it's a trope I haven't seen, so.
Well, they don't do it too much anymore.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
For reasons.
A lot of reasons. A lot of probably very reasonable reasons. But when he does it, his partner, I guess.
McCoy
is holding on to her, holds her limp body. They give each other a look like, you did the right thing, Tom. And then Tom goes off to go fight the bad guy.
But with a sledgehammer.
With a sledgehammer. God damn, it's so weird. But stuff like that is, I can't say it's a negative at the movie. It's more of a negative of, it shows the times in mm-hmm. which the movie was made, where that's a weird trope. Or the when we watched one of those, I think it was a Hitchcock film, when mm-hmm. he kisses the lady in the train.
Was that Spellbound? I don't remember.
The cops are looking for...
Oh, no, that was Hitchcock. That was the 39 Steps.
39 Steps. So in that film, there's a point where the main character's hiding from the cops. And
kiss me quickly, and yeah. the police won't pay attention to us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know this. It's weird. I know it's culturally different, and the times are different. It's hard for me to watch that and be like, just accept it. It's just so strange. This is my negatives. But the positives, I think, outweigh the negatives.
Yeah.
It's fun and lighthearted. It's fast. It's an hour 30.
Hour 30.
Hour 30. It's quick. It is everyone, because they're one note, they can be hammy with it.
Sure. There's like so little character development. Yeah. There is. I mean, characters evolve and change for the better.
Sure.
But you see their arcs a mile away.
Yeah. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
But it's fun. If you can let go of logic. If you can let go of all logic and reason.
Suspend your disbelief a little bit.
Just accept this weird world that you're put into. I think it's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun movie. It's silly. Rick Moranis steals the show.
As always.
Yeah. He's great. Tom Cody, the guy, what is his name?
Michael Perret. Yeah.
Great leading man. Like, perfect for what he's doing.
Yeah, he does a real good job, doesn't he?
Yep, that was the voice.
That was every line.
And also the acting, it reminded me of high school theater, because nobody's listening to anybody.
No.
Like, for the laymen who are listening to this, in theater, there's a general rule where you have to listen. You're in acting, good, air quotes, good acting is listening and reacting to what the other person is saying and doing.
Mm-hmm. Because there'll be variations in performances.
Mm.
Someone will say a line slightly differently, and if you respond in the way you rehearsed it over and over again, it might not fit tonally with the line that was said just before.
Right.
You want to be on the same wavelength as everyone else you're performing against.
Yes. And high school theater has a problem with that. Every high school actor or every high school theater kid, they are entirely focused on themselves and their lines. So, like, someone will say a line, and then immediately afterwards, someone else says a line.
Yeah.
And because they were going for, you could feel that was what they were trying to do. It works.
It was very acty.
Yes, super acty. I enjoy it. There's something hokey and fun about that. I think it is timeless.
They go for it, and mm-hmm. I think they by and large achieve that.
Yes,
I love the scene, and I think you pointed out while we were watching it, where Rick Moranis and Amy Madigan and Michael Perret are all in the car, and I like their names actually in the movie better. Tom Cody, Billy Fish, no Fish, and McCoy, all in the car, and they're all at this level. Hey, you,
yeah.
Hey, shut up. Look, I'm in charge here. We don't need you to tell us what's going on. Sit down, little man.
It was like all the characters were one character having a schizophrenic attack. Just all yelling at each other. And it was so much fun. It was just so silly and lighthearted. Fun. Just fun. It was 80s to the max.
Very 80s.
Yeah.
The explosions.
Yes, yes.
The guy, Michael Pere, shoots a motorcycle and it flips over and explodes.
That was another thing I love about the 80s action is, I know it's real, I know I was saying that earlier, like, the stuff that we're able to do with computers is amazing.
Yeah.
But I know that explosion does not look like that. I know that's not real. Obviously, when a motorcycle taps another motorcycle, it doesn't explode.
Ding!
Yeah, there was a point where that happened. But when you see the explosions, they're smaller and they're less epic. But because of that, it feels real. It feels like very visceral when mm-hmm. an explosion happens or when a fight happens. Like the ending fight between Cody and
Raven. The leader of the biker gang, the Bombers.
Also, Willem Dafoe is great.
Yeah.
He is perfect as a villain. His face is just evil.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do much.
No, he does not. something about his mouth that just seems mean.
You like his mouth?
Yeah, I love his mouth. I love Willem Dafoe's mouth. But their fight at the end feels visceral, too. It feels more like... I'm not gonna compare it to John Wick. That's a whole other type of visceral. Not like John Wick. It's not like John Wick. But no. You know when Indiana Jones.
Okay.
You know when he punches that Nazi and you hear whoosh. Yeah, yeah, and it feels cartoony, Flash Gordon-y. Mm-hmm. This was like that, but a little darker, a little more realistic.
Just a little bit. Because actually while I was watching it, the sound design of the punches and everything actually reminded me of Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Because it is this big slapping sound whenever they punch each other. Whoosh.
And they fight. Oh god, they start the battle or the duel or whatever you want to call it with giant sledgehammers.
Yeah,
which I have never seen in a movie.
No.
Yeah, it's very very unique.
And that's when Raven brings them out like, here, I brought these. we're gonna fight with sledgehammers.
The whole city is surrounding them. The cops, the bad guys, the regular people, they're all watching these guys just fight it out in the streets.
The police chief to Tom Cody, the Drifter, kick his ass.
It's so fucking ridiculous. So watching them fight with sledgehammers that punch each other, it was simple. It was like, it was to the point, and the choreography was simple. Mm-hmm. It feels like, yep, these guys are, this is how they would fight. It is fun.
Didn't go on too long.
No,
it was perfect. Yeah, it was a good fight scene. Layered.
I think that's about as much. Yeah.
What did you think of the music? Because it is supposed to be rock and roll musical.
I thought that it felt like the musical part of it was an afterthought.
And it certainly was not.
Really?
No.
Oh, that's weird.
From the ground up, they wanted this to be about rock and roll and music. And
well, they did not succeed.
That's probably my biggest criticism of the film is I feel like they could have had one or two more songs in there and had the music interact with what was going on in the scene that was surrounding it a little better.
Yeah.
You do that, then I think I would really like this movie. Because you're right. It feels tacked on, but it was not. Mm-hmm. Everything I've heard, like from the ground up, they wanted this to be a rock and roll musical action movie. And I like the music,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't mesh terribly well
with
the movie itself.
I could have done with either more music or one musical number. I could have done with
like... Bookend it, maybe?
Yeah,
with her, like... The song before she gets kidnapped, and then the song at the end is Tom Cody's driving off in the sunset with McCoy.
That was another thing. Okay.
Oh, can we talk about McCoy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I really like that. I like... So McCoy's I'm going to bite my tongue. I almost made a joke that would have gotten me in trouble in the future.
I think I know what joke you were going to make.
Yes. McCoy is a female. She's a tough ex-Marine?
She was in the army. She was in the motor pool.
Okay, so she's this tough chick, chicky babe, and...
yeah, that's not going to get you in trouble.
Yeah. Well, the other thing I was going to say was way worse. But she's this tough lady, and her relationship to Tom was friendly.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated that. Like, bring up my SJW hat. All of the women in the film I liked.
Yeah.
And that is rare.
They were handled well.
Mm-hmm.
Except for that one... Actually, you know what? And I said, and she's out of the movie. And I was joking.
No, she really is
out of the movie. Was actually out of the movie. There was one character, but she's like a do-nothing character. Yeah, she must have had some deleted scenes or something. But, yeah, there was McCoy,
mm-hmm.
and even the sister, and Ellen.
Yes, all three women had different... And they had different personalities.
Yeah.
Like, when you watch movies from the 80s and the 90s and the 70s and the 60s...
In the
50s, 40s, and the 40s,
and
the
30s,
and the 20s?
Oh, yeah.
And the
10s? Oh, yeah.
In the 100s?
No. Oh, okay. Let's stop at the 10s.
And the 10s. Literally, the 10s, 1910, till about... When did women start to become characters in movies? Like, real...
You could... No.
70s?
I mean, there are always outliers.
Right.
Like... Ridley. Exceptions to the rule, mm-hmm. like throughout, some might say that time is yet to come. But
I would say
late 70s early 80s
are when female characters started to have a little
more regularly.
Okay.
Yeah, in film.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
But it was nice seeing female characters that do things. That's something that annoys me when I watch movies, not even in a feministy way, just in like I don't want to watch a bland character, female or not. I don't give me a blank slate character. I want to see something, and so McCoy was great.
And it's especially nice considering they really could have gone with a blank slate mm-hmm. female lead that they're all going after, and that be the only female character in the movie. And I don't think anyone would have batted an eye when this movie came out. The kind of movie it is very fairy tale-esque, mm-hmm. the story and how it's presented. And if they're going for like this kind of 1950s vibe, they could have done that and no one would have batted an
eye. McCoy could have been a dude.
I think actually McCoy might have been originally written to be as a guy.
Like Ripley from Alien.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. But I think that's why I think that's what made it work, was that it was probably written as a male character, and then for whatever reason they made a female character, and it made it more interesting.
It did, and there was some nice, you know, gender dynamics with her mm-hmm. and Rick Moranis.
What's this chick doing here?
Skirt.
The skirt. Oh, it's the skirt.
Get out of here, skirt.
It's like that woman has never worn a skirt in her life. I really liked her. I liked the dynamic between the female characters. Some were friendly with each other. Some didn't like each other. That's rare in the mm-hmm. 80s.
And all the characters.
All the characters. Actually. They all had good dynamics with each other. They played off of each other well. Everyone knew what movie they were in.
Yes. And that's important for a movie with this kind of tone. Mm-hmm. This specific type of cheese.
Yeah.
So you can play it way too cheesy. Or you could play it just so gosh darn straight.
Mm-hmm.
But no, everyone knew this, like, to be at the right level all the time. Ed Begley Jr. was in this. I know you don't know who that is, but I was super... I had forgotten he was in this. He's in one scene as a...
Vagabond?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. A vagrant.
Yes.
And he might have played it a little too comedically, but whatever.
He's in one scene.
And he's doing his best Ed Begley Jr. impressions.
As far as if I would recommend it for people.
Yeah.
I would not recommend it for anyone that can't handle older films. No. I know that 1984.
Yeah.
Now I know 1984 is not considered an old film, but it still feels old relative till now. Like the pacing.
Sure.
I think if this movie was made now, the pacing would be so fast.
Which is strange, because this is a pretty quickly paced film.
Yes, yes. But I think that between the two of us, I'm like the everyman of this podcast.
Sure.
That, like, you're better than me when it comes to movies.
Maybe. You have a nice way of putting your thoughts into words, though, on films.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
You have 500... You organized this. So you're the knowledgeable guy. I'm the person who asks questions so that you can learn about it, and you're the person who teach. I'm Luke, you're Obi one in this podcast.
Oh, thank you.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, this is very nice of you.
Thanks. Not
someone who is not accustomed to ultra films.
Right.
And I get that, especially for this film, even though it was made in the 80s, mm-hmm. they're going for a very like 80s plus 1950s vibe. Yeah. And so it feels like an older film than it is.
It's interesting. And I think that... I think anyone that loves film would love this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you... Here's a good metric. If you love the Transformers films, you will not like this movie. Is that fair? Like,
unless you love it for the explosions. Then you'll like that one scene.
I don't even think you... Because you would be so used to... mushroom cloud explosions that a motorcycle exploding doesn't mean anything to you.
A dozen motorcycles. There's a lot of motorcycles explode.
But I think
that
type of person wouldn't enjoy this. But if you're like me, who does not like those films, but also can... Okay. You're Gordon Ramsay.
Okay.
And I'm the guy from Man vs. Food.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
So, like, I can enjoy this and you can enjoy this. I think Gordon Ramsay and Man vs. Food, they can both enjoy stuff like this.
Yeah. Well-made.
Yes.
Schlock is well-made
still. It is. Yeah. It's still enjoyable. I don't know what the... Then whoever likes the Transformers movies is like that fat guy that sits on the couch and doesn't do anything and just eats Cheeto Puffs all day.
So you're talking about me still.
These analogies aren't working anymore. but basically, yes, generally speaking, I would suggest watching it. It's fun. It's fun. It's silly. Just turn your brain off. Enjoy it.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. I agree. Thank you, Aaron. I'm glad you enjoyed Streets of Fire. I really am. I was hoping you would, but you can see we're like, not everyone, this is not everyone's cup of tea.
No, it is not.
But I think it is rather enjoyable. Again, especially if you can get in that mindset early in the film. And yeah, very enjoyable.
Yes. All right, I hope the next episode is... Should I be concerned?
No, it depends on which one you pick.
Ooh, that's scary. Okay, so it sounds like from the next one, there's at least two I haven't seen.
One second. Let me see.
I'm waiting for the bomb to drop. I'm waiting for another Potep.
Oh, no. We got a few more episodes before that comes. But it will come. Don't you doubt it, friend.
Yeah.
Next episode, No, you're good. You're good. You'll have options between... Very different... All three very different films. Okay. Extremely different. And I could see you, if you haven't seen any of them, you might not have seen any of them. You definitely haven't seen two. I could see you picking any one depending on your mood.
Oh, so I get to pick out of all three.
You might have seen one, I don't know.
Okay.
But if you haven't, I wouldn't be surprised if you wanted to see that one. Next episode, I think you're A-okay.
Okay.
Depends on what you want, what you're feeling like.
All right, I'm excited for it, though.
Yeah. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for watching Streets of Fire with me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you liked it, and until next time.
Until next time, bros.
This has been a Buddy System presentation of Film Favorites.